Fanscape, a fan fiction podcast, presents Blood and Venom Part 2, Shattered Reality. Chapter 10. At the Summit.
The small television sitting on the table served as the only source of light in the small room, its screen now overcome with white static. The VCR it was hooked up to had spit out the recording of her best friend's demise some time ago, but Lauren could only sit in front of it and stare at the corrupted screen, her face devoid of emotion, as the ending of the video kept repeating itself in her head. As much as she wanted to believe that her friend had managed to recover from the fall and push onward, far enough to escape into Oakside Park, where she'd face and defeat the demon once again, she knew that this wasn't the case. And the evidence was in Kate's wardrobe. It wasn't lost on her that Kate and the Chaser had been wearing the same clothes, that they both had the same dark hair, the same pale skin tone, the exact same stormy gray eyes. But Lauren couldn't bring herself to accept what it all meant. She couldn't accept that her friend was suffering a fate worse than death. A fate where she'd been dragged into the depths of Oakside Park to be tortured until the suited man had driven her to insanity and deemed her a worthy servant. Worst was the idea that her consciousness was still alive. Trapped inside of her own mind and forced to look on as her body acted as a feral slave to an ancient evil. Lauren loathed these ideas so much that she pushed them out of her head, electing to believe that Kate truly was dead. That some dark force had been planted in her lifeless body by the faceless monster. It was better that way, for Kate wouldn't be forced to endure the same suffering that Charlie had. The same agony that countless others had undoubtedly felt before them both. However, regardless of what she told herself to make the truth easier to bear, she couldn't deny that Kate and the Chaser were one and the same.
"She's been dead or worse this entire time."
Lauren managed to whimper, her words catching in her throat. The distraught woman clenched her fist, her nails digging into her flesh as tears streamed from her puffy red eyes. She couldn't hold back her tears anymore. She couldn't act brave. She couldn't even stand up from her chair. She could only bury her face in her hands and cry, mourning the loss of the best friend she'd ever had. She couldn't bring herself to remember that she was still in danger, to find the motivation to keep moving, or even to wonder why Kate had never made it to the radio tower, despite the evidence of her making it well beyond her house. Of course, Lauren had no way of knowing that Kate had made it to her destination, only to be abruptly brought back to her home by an unseen force, leaving someone else behind.
"Carl!"
Lauren realized, jumping up from her chair. Kate was gone, one way or another. Lauren knew that now. In as much pain as she was in, as much as she wanted to break down and give in to despair, she couldn't. She had to be strong for Carl, who she hoped was still out there, somewhere. He and Kate had been traveling together. That much she knew for certain. And it was clear that they had been separated at some point. She had no idea how Kate had ended up back at her house while Carl kept moving forward, as she doubted that her friend would have just turned around and left Carl to fend for himself. But all the signs pointed to Carl continuing his journey to the radio tower, despite whatever happened to Kate. She needed to find him. That way, Kate's death wouldn't be in vain. As for her enemies, the monsters who'd taken her best friend, her sister, from her, Lauren didn't know how, and she didn't know when, but she swore that one way or another, she was going to make them pay.
"First, I need to get out of this building,"
she muttered, retrieving her equipment and making her way over to the locked door, a dilemma that had been irritating her for a couple of hours. However, as she stared at the obnoxious little mechanism that kept her a prisoner, an idea popped into her head.
"I wonder,"
she muttered, reaching out and taking the padlock in her hand, proceeding to pull it right off the door.
"It's a dummy lock,"
she said with a scoff, tossing it to the floor.
"But why is it on the inside of the building? That kind of defeats the purpose.
She realized then that the lock had been placed there specifically for her to find, to give the illusion that she had nowhere to go and had nothing to do but watch those tapes, undoubtedly by the same person who left them sitting there for her to find. She still wasn't sure who was responsible for it, but she suspected Firebrand, for the enemy would have simply broadcasted the memories directly into her mind, just as it had with Charlie's final moments of humanity.
But why did he want me to see all of that?
She wondered, throwing the door open and letting the evening sunlight flow into the building, looking back at the corrupted television for a moment before stepping out onto the dirt path ahead. A cool evening breeze hit her as she found herself back on the grassy ridge, staring at a trail that wound higher up the tree-dotted mountain range. To her right, the rocky terrain formed the natural wall that brushed against the metal building, and to her left was a ledge overlooking a view just as scenic as the one she'd witnessed earlier. Dim beams of light shone through the trees around her, casting ominous shadows on the darkening earth, and the distant mountains shone golden red in the setting sun. The ridge and its views were just as beautiful as before, but Lauren could find no pleasure in them now. She hiked up the path in silence, still keeping her camera pointed ahead of her as she ascended the mountain pass.
I don't know why I'm still bothering to record this. What's the point? So I can know I'm about to die a few seconds before it happens?
She said bitterly. The radio tower was within sight, just as it had always been. But she was close now, close enough to make it there before nightfall. And in the darkening sky, the tower's glowing red light served as her last beacon of hope. Finally, after enough hiking to get on her nerves, she reached the end of the trail. A small grassy area with a few trees scattered around, appearing to be nothing more than a dead end. A rocky wall separated her from the mountain's summit, the place she needed to be if she wanted to find Carl.
It's never simple, is it?
She grumbled, preparing herself for a grueling climb. However, just as she was about to test her luck with scaling the stone barrier, she caught sight of a dark opening in the mountainside.
Oh great, another cave.
She muttered as she approached the crevice, almost preferring the opportunity to fall to her death over another abyss. Upon closer inspection of the pitch-black fissure, she shined her flashlight inside and saw that there were old wooden support beams holding up the rocky ceiling within. That was when she noticed the broken sign laying on the ground just outside of the passage, one that was made of decaying wood and explained the purpose of the tunnel. Ranger's Pass. Beware of falling stones.
The old Oakside Park Rangers must have used this back in the day.
Lauren noted. Nervously, she took her first step into the rocky abyss, and then another, and on the third, she was completely swallowed by darkness, her flashlight serving as the only source of light in the eerie underground tunnel. With the evening sunlight behind her, she made her way forward, unnerved by how quiet the passage was. She soon discovered that the path had fallen victim to a rock slide, and with no other options, she lowered herself down the steep, rocky ledge, knowing full well that it wouldn't be possible to turn back, as she dropped down onto the cold dirt below. She waved her flashlight around to look for any threats, and to her relief, there wasn't anything nasty waiting for her in the darkness. But she wasn't about to let her guard down. Cautiously, she kept moving forward, passing patches of moss and fungal growth as she followed a downward slope. It was then that her boots suddenly collided with something metal, and sent it rolling away with a loud clang. Lauren barely managed to catch the rolling object in her flashlight's beam before it disappeared from sight, revealing it to be an empty can of white paint. A chill ran up her spine as she shined her flashlight around the cave's walls, finally noticing the manic writing that covered them.
Need to end this. I'm so sorry. He wants them to warn you. I'm sorry. It's so simple. His arrival is coming. Sorry. End it here. You know about him. He knows about you. Stop it. You're helping his arrival. End this. You warn them and doom them. Read this and die. I can't stop. It can end. There will be no arrival. I'm so sorry for everything. This can spread no further. End it all with fire. He'll be gone forever.
Who the hell wrote all of this?
Lauren wondered. Some of the phrases were repeated numerous times, and some were written only once. The paint wasn't fresh by any means, meaning the demented ramblings had been there for quite some time. She found herself thinking back to the cryptic messages carved into the walls and floors of the Coleman mine, and even the writing in the metal building stating that the creator wanted to die. While it was true that they were similar to the crazed ramblings that Kate had branded her bedroom with, Lauren found it hard to believe that she'd done the same to this cavern. She could easily wrap her head around the idea of Kate marking up the mines during her descent into madness, mainly because she'd faced the chaser in them. But she found it hard to believe that Kate would have been able to cover so much ground given the circumstances. Even if the cave paintings were noticeably older, based on the context of the writing, the only other likely candidate was Carl himself, especially since he would have had no choice but to pass through the tunnel to get to the tower.
These seem old, though. He must have done all of this before he and Kate went on the run. If it even was him.
As she stood there, lost in her thoughts, she was completely unaware of the situation developing just outside of the tunnel. The radio station stood dark and ominous on the mountaintop, its towers still broadcasting that strange, unintelligible signal that the residents of Oakside would occasionally pick up, only to dismiss it as an anomaly when it snuffed itself out just as quickly as it appeared. The burning red light of the tower shined like a hellish star in the darkening sky, and as the sun finally dipped below the mountains and extinguished its last few rays of light, a powerful force of darkness entered the dense foliage, strolling leisurely among the trees as it waited for its victim to walk into its trap. The suited man enjoyed his walks through the woods almost as much as he enjoyed an elaborate plan falling into place. And in that moment, he was experiencing the best of both worlds. As evil as he was, the demon had no quarrel with nature, often finding the calm tranquility of the forest to be soothing in a way that nothing else was. He found the skittering rodents, chirping birds, and all the other beasts of the woods to be amusing, undeserving of the torment that he took pleasure in inflicting on the human race. For the animals were creatures of mindless habit, beings who cared only for survival, and the administrator found beauty in their simplicity. He wasn't alone in his walk, as one might expect, for his collective melted in and out of the shadows all around him, rarely taking physical form, for they often preferred their incorporeal states. Of course, the administrator was able to tell who was who flawlessly, for it was he who had breathed life into them in the first place. First, there was Persolus, the old man who'd been completely consumed by darkness, his eyes and mouth little more than pitch-black craters in his miserable face. Second came Swain, with his smiling theater mask and tattered uniform from his days as a German soldier. Third was Cursor, with an unnerving smile plastered on her pale face and eyes stitched shut in the shape of X's, forever blind to how vile and selfish her mortal actions had truly been. The fourth was Mr. Scars, who named himself after the horrific wounds that covered his entire body, only some of which were self-inflicted. Deadhead was the fifth, a hunchbacked specter dressed in black robes, his exposed skull still serving as propaganda for the organization he'd inspired so long ago. Lastly, there was the Observer, a being seemingly comprised entirely of shadow, the only identifiable features on him consisting of glowing white glasses and the demented smile that frequently appeared on his face. He walked in stride with his master, almost as eager to get on with their plan as the suited specter himself. Of course, it all would have been so much sweeter if the collective still had its seventh member, the one who'd gone away, who'd severed himself from their influence, who even now continued to hinder their progress at every turn, something he never would have been able to do without the power he'd stolen from them. The Observer's blood boiled at the thought of Firebrand, a man he'd once trusted, a man who'd betrayed them all, It was a sin that none of them could ever forgive. A sin that the Administrator had been trying to punish for a long, long time.
Tell me, Observer. Have you done as I have asked? Is our contingency in place?
Of course, my keeper.
The Observer said, still grinning maniacally.
Although, I can't help but wonder why it was necessary. Won't the ambush be enough?
Are you questioning my judgment?
No, of course not. I apologize. I didn't mean to.
No, I suppose you wouldn't. Of all of my servants, you have always been the most loyal. But it is imperative that we see this through properly. There's no room for error, especially with the likes of Firebrand interfering with my plans. That wretch, I would love nothing more than to feed him his own entrails.
Who knows? Maybe you'll still get the chance.
An annoyingly familiar voice rang out from behind them.
You!
The Administrator growled, turning around to face the grinning entity standing on the hill behind him.
You dare show your face here? Fool, I will consume what's left of your soul and cast you into the abyss.
You've tried that before, remember? Didn't work out so well for you last time.
Firebrand taunted, watching as the collective slowly advanced on him.
Anyway, I'm not here to talk. I figured if nobody else was going to stop what you're trying to do, then I might as well step in.
You have stopped nothing. Your power is laughable compared to mine.
The demon hissed as spidery limbs erupted from its back.
Maybe so, but I've picked up a few new tricks since the last time we met.
Firebrand boasted. He then held up his hands as the eyes set in his palms began to glow.
Karma's a bitch.
He slammed his hand down on the ground, and immediately an inferno erupted all around them, spreading uncontrollably and devouring everything in its path. As flames engulfed the forest, each member of the collective shrieked in terror as the fire roared after them, melting into the shadows to escape the sudden blaze.
What is this? What have you summoned?
The Administrator demanded, backing away from the blaze.
What? Don't you recognize hellfire when you see it?
Firebrand cackled, watching the demonic flame surround his nemesis.
Have fun, shithead!
With that, Firebrand gave a salute and vanished. Before the Administrator could do anything to stop it, a dozen burning trees came crashing down on him. A loud rumble shook the cave, sending dust and stones falling from the ceiling.
What the hell was that?
Lauren muttered, a feeling of dread creeping over her. She then noticed that the rumbling wasn't stopping, and it didn't take long for her to realize what was happening.
Oh shit!
She gasped, then took off running as the tunnel began to collapse. She couldn't think beyond blind survival instinct, couldn't hear anything over the thunderous roar of stone crashing to the ground behind her. She could only run forward and pray that the passage had an opening. And it was then that the scent of smoke suddenly hit her nose. She dove out of the cave and back onto the mountainside, just as the ceiling came crashing down behind her, spewing dust everywhere and sealing the tunnel for good. However, Lauren had no time to recover from her brush with death, for she quickly realized that she quite literally jumped out of the frying pan and into the fire. The first thing she felt was a sudden intense blast of heat as her eyes adjusted to the blinding orange glow. An absolute inferno surrounded her, engulfing everything in sight as suffocating black smoke overtook the night sky. The air around her was unbearably hot, and everything was enveloped in a smoky red haze.
What the fuck happened? Everything was fine a few minutes ago!
She stammered, petrified by what she was witnessing. She looked around frantically, trying to find a way through the forest fire. And through the smoke and flames, she caught sight of the burning red light of the radio tower, closer now than ever before.
There! The station is my only chance!
She decided, not about to just stand there and wait to be burned alive. Quickly plotting a course through the forest fire, she took a deep breath and sprinted towards the radio station. And it was then that the whispers hit her ears. They were similar to the ones she'd heard back in Oakside Park when she'd first met the Collective. Only now they seemed much more harsh and agitated, and she could swear that screams of agony were mixed in with them. Suddenly, a roar of demonic rage hit her ears from nearby, and she watched as the suited man burst out of a flaming pile of fallen trees, his spider-like appendages writhing in the air around him. He locked eyes with her for only a moment, but it was long enough for countless black threads to erupt from his back and began snaking towards her, the same threads that had ensnared Charlie Masson Jr. so long ago. Her eyes widened in fear and she charged forward, dodging flames and tendrils alike as she fought her way through the inferno, doing her best to avoid falling trees and branches. She did her best to ignore the unnatural sound echoing all around her, from the chilling whispers to the same unnerving ambiences she'd heard while hunting down those 8 pages in Oakside Park, all of them playing at once in unholy unison. The suited man's tendrils were everywhere, shooting up into the sky, sneaking along the ground, and wrapping around the few things that weren't engulfed in flames as he approached her. Lauren could still feel the unnatural chill that the demon brought wherever he went, but the heat from the fire more than overpowered it. As she struggled through the blaze, she began to notice the strange properties of the fire. Sometimes it roared after her, hungrily trying to sear her flesh. In other times, it would shy away from her as if it was trying to find its own destructive nature. Then, there was the suited man, and how he was taking great effort to keep away from the flames as they stopped at nothing to eat away at the demon. Lauren quickly came to the conclusion that this fire wasn't natural. In fact, it almost seemed to be targeting her adversary, as if it was deliberately helping her. She wasn't sure what kind of divine intervention she was experiencing, but she was grateful for it, even if it was volatile and unpredictable. Lauren pushed herself further than she'd ever pushed herself before. She pretended she couldn't hear the snake-like tendrils writhing towards her. She pretended the pounding migraine wasn't there. She pretended that her nose wasn't gushing blood like a faucet, that her very bones didn't ache, that she could take more than a few breaths at a time instead of struggling to breathe through the suffocating black smoke. She ran and she ran and she ran, always keeping her eyes on the objective and not daring to look behind her, until at long last, she could see the radio station just around the next bend. Suddenly, an ice-cold tendril wrapped around Lauren's ankle and jerked her off her feet, knocking her equipment out of her hands. She hit the ground hard and watched in a stunned daze as her flashlight rolled off into the flames, never to be seen again. Her camcorder landed in the dirt only a few feet away, and she could see its cracked screen being overtaken by white static as she was dragged backwards.
No! No, 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 no! No!
Lauren screamed, kicking at the tendril that bound her and clawing at the dirt as her entire body started to go numb. She was so close to her goal, but the radio station was just out of reach. She looked back at the monster in terror as it dragged its prey towards it, no doubt savoring the hard-earned victory.
This game has gone on for long enough!
The suited man roared, still trying to avoid the flames. The flames that were now ferociously attacking the tendril wrapped around its victim's ankle. She thought of how she'd seen the demon struggle against the unnatural fire so much, and it was when she spotted a thick, fallen branch wreathed in flames that she knew what she had to do. She reached out and grabbed it, just as the monster was reaching down to seize her, letting out a scream of pain as the fire seared her hands and tears flowed from her eyes.
Fuck you!
She shrieked, rolling over and swinging the branch at the demon, using most of her remaining strength to break it on his featureless face. The effect was instantaneous. Immediately, the suited man reeled back, letting out a screech of agony and releasing Lauren from his grasp. A triumphant smile spread across her face as she watched its flesh bubble and burn. But her face quickly fell when she saw the horrible wound beginning to heal over. She knew exactly what would happen if she stuck around, and she wasn't about to face the demon's wrath when it recovered. Her hands hurt like hell, but she managed to retrieve her camcorder as she sprinted back towards the radio station, running faster than she'd ever run before. The brick building was larger than she'd expected it to be, and the tower stood tall to the left of it, but its glowing red light was now completely obscured by the black smoke lingering in the air, She could see a metal door hanging wide open at the front of the building, and just as she picked up her pace, she heard a hellish roar ring out from somewhere behind her. Lauren took one look back and regretted it as soon as she did. In its rage, the faceless demon had become almost unrecognizable, for most of its body now consisted of writhing, slimy, black tentacles. And its lower half had morphed into something that vaguely resembled eight black spider legs. Its pale, featureless face rested near the center of the abhorrent black mass. Melted and burned beyond anything it should have been able to endure, the monstrosity let out another shriek of demonic fury and charged forward, its spider-like appendages swiftly carrying it up the hill in complete disregard for the flames. To see that the sight of it alone almost caused Lauren to faint would have been an understatement, and it took all of the remaining willpower she had to not fall to the ground and give in to pure, unfettered terror. She tore her eyes away from the abomination and charged towards the station, managing to make it through the open door, slam it shut, and lock it behind her just as the monstrosity was closing in on its prey. The entire building shook when the demon collided with the brick wall, and a shriek of eldritch fury rang out from the other side of the door as dust fell from the ceiling. For a few moments, there was only silence, as if the monster was attempting to regain its composure. And then came the sound of knocking on the metal door, perhaps in an attempt to unnerve her further. Lauren heard nothing more from the outside world after that, and while she wasn't quite sure why the demon hadn't been able to enter the radio station, she was grateful for it. A terror like she'd never felt before had gripped her when she'd seen it in that monstrous form, and she still wasn't able to comprehend exactly what it was that she'd seen out there. Regardless, she finally escaped from the clutches of the suited man, at least for now. She let out a deep sigh of relief and lay down on the cool, carpeted floor, gasping for air and letting her aching muscles relax. The inside of the station was untouched by the fire, and not even the smoke had managed to get inside, proving once again that the inferno hadn't been natural, which was something she'd already figured out. Her migraine had also gone away immediately after entering the building, and her nose was no longer gushing blood. All of the disembodied whispers and unnatural sounds had faded into silence as well. For some reason that she didn't understand, the radio station was safe, at least for the time being. She had a feeling that the building wouldn't be able to ward off the demon forever, but she wasn't about to say no to a chance to recuperate, especially after that. It was then that a thought crossed Lauren's mind.
Maybe the tower's signal is capable of disrupting that thing's influence. That would explain why he wasn't able to get inside and why I suddenly felt so much better when I ran in here. Yeah, that has to be it. Nothing else would make any sense.
She felt a smile creep across her face as she thought about her new theory, ignoring the voice in the back of her head that was warning her that the monster was just toying with her.
Good thinking, guys.
She laughed, hardly able to believe that Kate and Carl's plan had actually worked.
Wait, Carl! He's here somewhere!
Lauren picked herself up off the ground and tried to get her bearings, her eyes having yet to adjust to the darkness of the radio station. She'd lost her flashlight to the inferno, so the only source of light that she had was the dim, cracked screen of her camcorder, which was running dangerously low on battery. As she tried to feel her way through the room, she felt her foot collide with something small and metal. Out of curiosity, she bent down to pick it up and discovered it to be a lighter. She had no way of knowing it, but this was the same lighter that Kate had dropped while fleeing that very building.
This'll work.
She smirked, trying to ignore the pain in her burned hands as she ignited its small flame. It wasn't nearly as efficient as a flashlight, but she wasn't about to complain. She discovered that the room that she stood in was a small one, acting as more of a makeshift lobby than anything else. Old furniture was strewn about the room, and to her left, a weathered poster was attached to the wall. EPWS, the Emergency Public Warning System, is a protocol system whereby local authorities can warn the public about impending or current emergencies affecting their area. The EPWS can be activated by local police, fire departments, environmental agencies, and other provincial and local authorities as required. It can be activated for the following reasons: severe weather, flood, wildfire, hazardous material release, terrorist threat, water contamination, Amber Alert, other threats to life, property, and safety. For any further questions regarding EPWS rules and regulations, please contact your local Parks and Wildlife Agency.
Wait, Alberta stopped using the EPWS back in 2011. Is this place abandoned?
Lauren wondered,
looking around the room as much as she could with the small flame of her lighter. She'd noticed how untouched the place looked when she'd first come through the door, but hadn't really processed it until now.
If this station was abandoned so long ago, then how is the tower still broadcasting anything? And what is it broadcasting? Why did Kate and Carl even think to come here for that matter?
None of it made sense.
And the more she thought about it, the more she wondered how either of her friends would have had any way of knowing about the tower's supposedly anomalous properties.
A bad feeling crept over her as she navigated the rest of the lobby, discovering that there were two locked doors on the right side of the room, and a third door at the end opposite the entrance. However, she noticed one more thing, and that was an old sign bolted to one of the walls, its aged lettering barely visible in the warm glow of the lighter. ECVA Network. See what's important.
What the hell is ECVA? I've never even heard of that.
Lauren wondered. She quickly lost interest in this new mystery and returned to the more pressing matter of finding her missing friend. She tried opening the third door, and to her surprise, it wasn't locked. It swung open to reveal a long, winding hallway, bathed in darkness with old furnishings strewn about haphazardly.
She couldn't see them, but numerous doors were spread throughout the hallway that led off into different areas of the radio station, and almost all of them were locked.
This is a death trap if I've ever seen one,
she muttered, cautiously stepping into the hall and letting the door shut behind her. She nervously walked forward for a few moments, a strange feeling beginning to creep over her as if she was being watched. But it wasn't the suited man. It was something different. As Lauren struggled to find her way through the darkness, she suddenly noticed the soft breathing coming from right behind her, as well as the footsteps that were keeping pace with her own. Her blood ran cold as she turned around to see what was in the room with her. And in the dim, warm glow of the lighter's flame, she was just able to make out the white of the chaser's mask. She screamed and blindly delivered a kick into her brainwashed friend's stomach as the feral woman lunged at her, knocking her back long enough for her to turn and flee. She took off down the carpeted path with the enraged woman hot on her heels, struggling to keep the lighter's flame going as she navigated the dark halls of the radio station.
Kate, stop! It's me! It's Lauren!
She pleaded, hoping that she could reach what was left of her friend's consciousness. But her voice fell upon deaf ears as the snarling woman pursued her prey. She was thankful that the station wasn't a complete mess, as it kept her from tripping over anything in the darkness. But unfortunately, this also assisted her pursuer. Just when she felt herself starting to give in to exhaustion, an open door came into view as she finally reached the end of the hall. She bolted inside, slammed the door shut, and locked it just before the chaser could catch up to her, much to the dismay of the monster that Kate had become. She shrieked in rage and pounded on the metal door for a few moments, but it wouldn't budge. So, she began to pace outside of the room, growling and hissing as she waited for her prey to come back out.
Lauren did her best to ignore the awful noises, trying not to dwell on the fact that the feral woman trying to murder her had once been her best friend.
A friend who'd been reduced to a mindless puppet with an insatiable bloodlust. After taking a few moments to catch her breath, she began to explore the room she'd locked herself in, finding it difficult to tell what it was supposed to be, for it contained little more than a carpeted floor,
as if everything had been moved out of it long ago.
It was then that she noticed the foul smell, like charred hair and burned meat, causing her to gag and cover her nose and mouth with a sleeve.
God, what is that?
She choked out, her eyes beginning to water. However, with the awful smell came something else that was just as disturbing.
Everywhere I turn, it is there, every time. I open my eyes, I see a dark shadow. In my home, in my dreams, everywhere. It eats at me. Rips and tears and slashes my insides, my brain. It devours my everything. I must burn it down. Found me in the woods. Found me in the dark. What else do I do? You cannot hide. He will find you. He always finds you and never stops. Stop. I am sorry for everything. Why did you come here? Run. Run, 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 run. I can't see. I'm sorry. Run. It was following me and it will not stop. Everything burns and melts and withers and falls apart. You are my only choice. You have to be here so I can go. You will burn with everything else. You are my only choice. It will tear your brain apart and you will watch. It turns my head inside out and I cannot continue living this way. This is something I have to do. Something I was told to do. Whispers from my only friend who is gone now. Everything must be burnt to the ground for me to be free.
Just like the writing she'd seen in the cave, the demented ramblings that plaster the room's walls had been written in white paint, only this looks slightly fresher. As Lauren slowly made her way to the other end of the room, using her lighter to read the unnerving words, the smell of burned flesh grew stronger and stronger until finally it was unbearable. Resisting the urge to vomit, she read the words painted on the wall at the back of the room, dimly aware that she'd hit a dead end.
I failed you. I'm sorry. I failed you all. I'm so sorry for everything.
She felt her boot collide with something that felt like a leg. And when Lauren fearfully lowered her lighter to get a look at what was causing the awful smell, she yelped and jumped back when she saw the charred corpse slumped against the wall, burned beyond recognition. She couldn't tear her eyes away from the ghastly sight, and it was only when she saw the empty cans of kerosene scattered around the body, noticed the half-melted camcorder lying next to it, that she understood what it meant. For adorning the camera was a singed label, much like the one she'd seen on the lantern in Oakside Park, and the gas can in the Coleman Mines, with the exact same initials written on it. CR. Lauren finally broke down and slumped to the ground, sobbing uncontrollably. For her two oldest friends, the people that she'd gone through hell to find, were both gone. Unlike Kate and Charlie, Carl Ross had managed to avoid a fate worse than death by bringing about his own demise. Following in the footsteps of Frieda Matheson, he decided to burn himself to death rather than face the suited man again. A bitter end to the defiant mission he'd taken on all those years ago. Despite how determined he'd once been to defeat the demon, how hard he'd tried to save Kate and her mother from perdition, how much he'd wanted to avenge the Mathesons, his efforts had been futile in the end. He'd fought the demons harder than most could have hoped to for over a decade, and when he'd finally come to understand that there was no hope of beating them, that he was nothing more than a tortured vessel with the purpose of spreading his curse further, he'd allowed himself to succumb to darkness, just like so many others before him. Lauren wasn't sure how long she'd cried for, but it didn't matter to her anymore. She had failed to save her friends. She was trapped in this dead-end tomb of a building, and the feral shell of her oldest friend was lurking behind the room's only door, eager to end her life. There was nothing left for her to do now except wait for the inevitable end. She was so lost in grief that she almost forgot about the camera beside Carl's body, and when she remembered that it was there, she somehow found the willpower to reach over and take it in her shaky hands, noticing that a folded up, slightly burned note was taped to what was left of its screen. Not even bothering to wipe away her tears, Lauren unfolded the note and held her lighter up to it, unsure of what she expected to learn as she read its contents.
To anyone who finds us, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry for everything. This isn't your fault. I did this. By the time you read this, it's already too late for you. Don't let him into any more lives. This was all my fault. This can end with you. I let him in. Why did I ever let him in? I'm sorry for placing this burden on you. I wish it was all on me. This can't spread any further. Please, it all has to end with you. I wish there was some other way. It has to end. God forgive me.
Carl's suicide note hadn't told her anything she didn't already know. But for the first time in her entire journey, Lauren was seriously wondering if she should follow in the footsteps of those who'd come before her and end it all with fire.
None of it even mattered in the end. We were all dead from the start. Maybe Carl's right. Maybe the only way to end this is to take ourselves out. At least then we can't spread this disease to more people.
She whimpered miserably. With that depressing thought in her mind, Lauren brushed her finger across the play button on Carl's half-melted camcorder, jumping in surprise when horribly distorted audio began playing from the device. She sat there, as still as a stone, grateful that the camera screen no longer worked as she listened to her friend's final moments in silent horror. Station.
Oh God. No. I'm so sorry. Forgive me. I'm so sorry.
Carl choked out. And a moment later, he began screaming in agony as his body went up in flames. Something that only went on for a few moments before abruptly, mercifully, his screams faded into silence. As the recording ended, and Lauren let the burned camera fall to the ground, she found that she had no words, no emotions, and no hope. She would never get those awful screams out of her head. And the only thing that she'd learned from listening to that horrible tape was something she'd already figured out on her own. The radio station had never been a place of sanctuary, its tower having served as a beacon of false hope throughout her entire journey. The reason Kate had been so obsessed with it was because Carl had convinced her that the building was capable of helping them both. But what he hadn't told her was that he had been planning a double suicide to end their nightmare once and for all. Having chosen the abandoned radio station as the perfect place to do it due to its remote location, she now understood that the suited man had only been toying with her when he knocked on that door, when he'd acted like he couldn't get inside, when he'd made his negative influence fade from her body so suddenly. It had been part of his plan all along, give or take a few inconveniences, for he'd placed the chaser inside of the station as a contingency. And now, that plan was playing out exactly as intended. Now, Lauren was trapped, and it was only a matter of time before one of her enemies decided to finish her off. Suddenly, a new sound hit her ears, one that sounded like fighting. She heard the chaser shriek as something hit the metal door hard. And then again, and then something slumped to the ground. Something that sounded like a person. Silence followed as Lauren quickly stood back up, still clutching her lighter and camcorder, as she backed as far away from the door as she possibly could. Then, she heard the metal door slowly creak open, followed by the sound of footsteps slowly approaching her. She began to tremble as whatever was lurking in the darkness slowly approached her, and she felt terror grip her heart when her lighter's flame went out. She struggled to flick it back on, watching bright sparks fly futilely as she held it in front of her like a shield, unable to think of anything else. Her back was against the wall when the footsteps stopped, and a few tense moments passed before a decaying hand suddenly erupted from the darkness and grabbed Lauren by the mouth, muffling her scream of terror as the gruesome wraith that Charlie Matheson Jr. had become held her in place. Splotches of sickly blue overtook her vision as a fierce migraine ripped through her head, and then her world went dark and she knew no more. Thank you for listening to Blood and Venom, written by Arthur Faraday, under the username WoodMr13, distributed on Archive of Our Own. Season 2 of Fanscape has been funded by the Nevada Arts Council and the National Endowment of the Arts. Starring Aubrey Lima as Lauren Jones and Young Charlie, Catherine Archer as Kate Millens, David Klein II as the narrator, Xander Grant as Carl Ross, Chris McConaughey as the Slender Man. The Chaser sound effects performed by Annabelle Duncan. Guest starring Vincent C. Davis as The Observer, Jamie Petronas as Firebrand, Harlan Guthrie as the introduction narrator. Intro and credits music created by Dylan Griggs. Special thanks to our fellow podcasting friends who have helped make Season 2 possible at Malevolent, Through the Fog, The Impala Films, creators of Haunted and audio drama, Woe Begone, The Morbid Forest, and our friends at World Beyond and Jabun Audio. Before we end the episode, I just want to take a moment to say that while Season 2 of Fanscape was funded by a grant, future seasons will be done so out of pocket. This show has a high production cost, and any assistance you can give, be it by sharing Fanscape with a friend, or by joining our Patreon or Ko-Fi, or even buying merch to help fund the show financially, would be greatly appreciated and will help make Season 3 come sooner rather than later. Links for this and everything else mentioned in the credits can be found in the description or at thefanscape.com. Thank you for listening.